Good morning. Welcome to the Health and Nutrition Program with Eve Prang Plews. Eve is live in the studio. This is going to be a good one, and she's going to take your questions via email and take your phone calls to our email address, dj@wmnf.org. I see some early birds have already emailed in. Eve, how are you?
I'm good.
Yeah?
This isn't going to be a good show, Rob. I mean, we always have a good show. This is going to be a fantastic show.
Well, that's right. That's right. I didn't get the memo. So so we want to thank everybody that donated during our fund drive that went from the end of May to last Wednesday, and we raised more than $202,000 on the year. We're still trying to make up that difference, though, because we came up about $18,000 short. I noticed that a lot of people have been making contributions online, so thank you for that. In the last few days, a lot of people have made their contribution at WMNF.org. We'll let you know when we've closed the gap. I think we're a lot closer than $18,000, so if you haven't yet made a contribution to WMNF this year, we hope you make a contribution right now. Go to WMNF.org and let us know that you like Democracy Now! And that you like Eve Prang Plews' health and nutrition program. It really sends a big message to the station when you name your favorite show. So name your favorite show as you make that contribution. Go to WMNF.org.
Right, and especially those of you that call on a regular basis and get answers to your dilemmas on this show, when you get great ideas from John Butts doing sustainability, things that have made you change your behaviors or change your house, like it happened to me. You know, I've got a 500-gallon cistern now. I've got solar on my roof. You know, listening to John Butts every week moved me into action. And so if the things that we're doing here move you into action, then move into action for WMNF and make a contribution today.
Yeah, that'd be great. So I see we got four emails, and I was going to ask you about Anthony Bourdain, but then I thought, well, everybody else is talking about him. So you were in New York a few weeks ago. I don't know if you want to talk about
I was in New York this
Bourdain,
weekend.
Yeah. What are your thoughts? What did you find out in New York?
Well, I was at a conference for physicians. There were over 250 people in the audience, mostly MDs, and I did a program on plastic and how plastic affects the health, both of people and of the planet. And so you've heard me talk about this on the show before, that every single ounce of plastic that has been manufactured since the beginning of the manufacture of plastic is still here on the planet. And we're putting 8 million tons into the oceans every single year.
We're going to drown in plastic.
Well, I mean, the statistic that slapped me in the face was the statistic that said by 2050, the plastic in the ocean will outweigh all the fish. And, you know, for
that's
a kid that grew up on Indian
crime.
Rocks Beach, you know, throwing a line in the water, you know, getting on my dad's sailboat and, you know, throwing lures off the back of the boat, making sure we caught enough that when we went home, my mother wasn't yelling at us for having just been sailing around. It's frightening to think about that. But the thing that is most important is the realization that there is, no pun intended, the tide turning. When I was in the taxi in New York City on the way to LaGuardia Airport, they made the announcement that New York City has now banned the styrofoam clamshell boxes that people use for takeout. This morning on Amy Goodman, I heard that India is going to ban single-use plastic by 2022. But it's up to us to make a difference, because it isn't simply a matter of the fact that we're literally drowning in this plastic. Plastic never completely breaks down. It just gets smaller, smaller, smaller. And when I found the picture of the flea, the sea flea, something that's microscopic, something that you can't see with the naked eye, and inside its body were beads of microplastic, we want to understand that's the bottom of the food chain. And as the fishes and the other sea life eat those, we keep concentrating that to the point that they've actually cut open some fish and found plastic bits inside it. Mm. And I'm sure all of us wept when we saw the news on the whale that showed up in Thailand with all of the plastic bags in its stomach. So I'm trying to teach the doctors so that the doctors will teach their patients to eliminate single-use plastic bottles, single-use plastic bags. Be more careful with, you know, asking for something else for your takeout. Because when we look at these changes that have happened in the health condition in the United States in the last 40 years, we are beginning to realize that plastic is a part of that. Plastic binds to the insulin receptor sites. It lowers testosterone. It increases the risk of breast cancer. It creates more aggressive children. I mean, these are things that we want to do something about. So it's not always about the food. It's also about the chemicals that are in our environment.
We're going to take some phone calls in a little bit. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. I went to two restaurants over the weekend, you know, not high price, but one gave me a straw automatically, and I was pretty angry about that. And then the other one didn't, and I thought, oh, this is good. You know, they've been handing out so many straws, and I understand why people
have straws. A billion a day, Rob.
Yeah. But now that we know that they're showing up in the waste stream and showing up in the water, it just seems like there ought to be a total ban on them and single-use plastic bags.
Well, go to hashtag Stop Sucking, because hashtag Stop Sucking is about skipping the straw.
Yeah.
And so when we realize it's the fourth most common thing that's found in beach cleanups, but it's among the 10 most common things that are found all over the world as far as plastic litter is concerned, as soon as you sit down at the restaurant and they bring you the menu or they bring you the water, say this is a no straw table, you know, right away, put out that information. But, you know, I'm not just concerned about the toxins that exist in plastic. I'm concerned about a lot of other toxins, because the release that happened, the incredibly big win for the chemical industry that happened this last week, breaking down a very important law that was passed by Congress during the final year of the Obama administration, where the EPA, which I refer to as the Environmental Prostitution Agency, was required for the first time to evaluate hundreds of toxic chemicals and determine if they should face new restrictions. And what Nancy Beck, who is the director now of the EPA, a woman who worked for the chemical industry, what they've done is they've removed all the regulations about the toxin coming from the air, coming from the personal care products, or coming from the water. Now they will only evaluate the toxin's direct exposure. Well, I've got dry cleaning solution residues in our water. In Sarasota, a number of years ago, one of the dry cleaning plants contaminated the water table underneath, and they had to shut down every well that was a quarter of a mile in any direction. Well, now they'll no longer measure that as a threat, that the dry cleaning solution ended up in the water. They would only consider it a threat if you had direct exposure to the dry cleaning solution, which of course I wouldn't have unless I was working in a dry cleaning factory. So they have given a free ride to the chemical industry, and that's just in the review of the first 10 chemicals.
Wait a minute, how is direct exposure? If you drink that water, you have direct exposure, don't
right,
you?
But the idea is that they're not going to measure the little bits that can show up in the air, in the water, and in the personal care products, just like shampoo and cosmetics. It's not just cleaning solvents and paint strippers and things like that that you know from your nose are probably not a good idea. But any potential exposure that's caused by groundwater isn't going to be counted anymore as a threat. So, I mean, that's just given a free ride to the chemical industry. Because, again, remember the way the money flows. Big oil goes to big chem. Big chem goes to big ag, big meat, big pharma, and big food.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about that during the fund drive, because I know some people don't give to M&F because they don't like 100% of what we do. But I was thinking that, you know, whether it's, you know, buying groceries from a big agricultural company or buying cleaning products from a big chemical company, I mean, a lot of people freely buy their telephone from a company that argues against net neutrality and lobbies against your interests there in Washington, D.C. A lot of people buy all sorts of products that end up, you know, they lobby with some of the money that we give to these companies, and people don't think twice about buying that harmful product or buying that telephone or giving money to that cable company that turns around and lobbies against the public in Tallahassee and in Washington, D.C. It's just frightening how all these things that could come back and harm us, that people are actually giving money to support.
Well, I'll make a change in my office today. We buy a lot of our office supplies until today from the Ulane company. And I found out this last week that they are one of the biggest contributors to the most far-right organizations. And so effective today, my clinic will never be buying any products from that company anymore, whether it's the tape we use to close up a box that we're shipping stuff out, or even the cornstarch pellets that we use as fillers in those boxes. Those, you know, it's a small amount of business, but I have the ability to make a decision to not support organizations that are supporting principles that I disagree with.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take some phone calls. Eve Prang Plews is here. We're talking about health and nutrition. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Eve, can I read you the first email?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so Beth writes, she's in Auburndale. She says, my question today is about spicy food. Is it bad for your stomach or your esophagus? Also, I enjoy an occasional shot of tequila. Is that bad for the stomach or esophagus? What is a good alternative for heartburn, which I get at night? I'm worried that it might be damaging to me. I love your show. I learned so much. That's Beth.
Well, the stomach has a protective mucin lining in it. And that mucin lining means that the acids that get produced for digestion of foods, we've protected the lining of the stomach with that mucin layer. And so the nature of having spicy foods, no, if spicy foods were going to cause damage, then all of Central America would be really in trouble. So that's not the problem. But if you erode this mucus layer or mucin layer that happens on the inside of the stomach and you allow the actual skin, if you will, of the stomach to be exposed, not only to those spicy foods or alcohol, but to the stomach acids themselves, we can create an erosive gastritis. And that erosive gastritis means that that protective lining is not there any longer. So, you know, the same thing. If everybody ended up with stomach pain as a result of taking shots of tequila, we wouldn't be selling millions of gallons of tequila every year. But when you say you get heartburn at night, what we want to understand is that, you know, heartburn is really the wrong word. Yes, it's near your heart. We're talking about the pain that will happen between your breasts, right at the sternum. Your esophagus is about 9 inches long, and so it's going to be right there at the bottom of the esophagus. Really doesn't have anything to do with your heart. In fact, in Chinese medicine, it's called rebellious fire blazing upward. And rebellious fire blazing upward is actually a way better description of what's going on than heartburn is. But when we have heartburn, the irony is that the majority of people that have it are, number one, reacting to a food, and 50% of the clients that I see that have heartburn react to dairy products poorly, or it's a situation where they don't have enough acid, and that seems counterintuitive. But not having enough acid gives you exactly the same symptoms of having too much acid. The difference is this. If you eat the food and within a half an hour you're getting the burning, it's likely a reaction to a food. It's likely a reaction to excess development of acid. If you get the symptoms 3-4 hours later, you know, you eat dinner at 8 o'clock and midnight it wakes you up, then that is likely too little acid. But the spicy food or the tequila might affect one person and not affect the other 199, you know, in that list. So we can't make them, quote, a bad food. There are actually benefits to some of those bright spices.
See, you know, sometimes if I stay out late and drink late and then go to bed, let's say I'm drinking and eating at 10 o'clock and by 11 o'clock I'm in bed, that's bad for you, right? I mean, that's where you...
The eating late is not really an issue. Your body is digesting food 24 hours a day.
All right.
There's been too much emphasis put on that.
Is there a way to speed up that digestion process if you're going to bed right after you
eat? Not really, because it's a chemical process that acts in time. And what happens is the acid that's in the stomach acid HCl, hydrochloride, which breaks pepsin, the other enzyme in the stomach, in half and turns it into peptidase. These things only work on proteins. So your stomach acid won't digest an apple and it won't digest a piece of toast. It'll only work on the salmon and the shrimp and the steak and the egg and like that. So the nature of those stomach acids, the amount of time that they work depends on the temperature of the stomach. If you start your meal with drinking a big old glass of iced tea and then having a salad right out of the refrigerator, and then you turn around and have, you know, cold ice cream or something for dessert, you keep lowering the stomach temperature. And so that lengthens the digestive process. So you've seen sometimes on the educational television when they do a special on China and people are eating and there's steam coming off the food. Well, your body likes that. So the only way that you can really, quote, speed up digestion is to put something in that's already above 98 degrees, above your body temperature. Because when you put in these chilled foods, the first thing the body has to do is cook them. It has to bring them up to 98 degrees for those enzymes to start to work. Enzymes are very temperature sensitive. So otherwise, you can't speed up the process. And then it takes about 10 hours for food to transport the small intestine where the rest of the digestive process takes place.
Very interesting. All right, so we've got a bunch of more emails. Sally writes, I wrote in 2 weeks ago asking about food and supplements for someone who has been diagnosed with lupus. Eve asked that I write in today because she wanted to give me information after she had been to the conference about autoimmune disease. I'm wondering if she could help me figure out what foods and supplements to stay away from and which ones work to reduce inflammation and dry mouth. That's from
Sally. Well, lupus is a very complicated condition, and you're talking about two specific things, inflammation and dry mouth, and so we'll address those, but you want to understand that that's not necessarily a coordinated list with lupus. As far as dry mouth is concerned, you know, we're often looking at the autoimmune disease Sjogren's disease, which is when salivary glands and other liquid-forming glands in the body are underworking. And so Chinese medicine says this is a yin deficiency. You've heard the terms yin and yang. Well, foods are categorized that way. And so the yin or moistening foods are better than the yang or hot, dry foods. So excess amounts of protein and salt will definitely make the dry mouth worse. But when we, you know, think of a meal. I'm going to stew this chicken. And in the stew of the chicken, I'm going to put onions and carrots and potatoes and green beans and zucchini, you know, make a nice stew out of it. And here's the chicken that we cooked on the grill. We can see a difference between the moist chicken that came out of the stew and the very dry chicken that came off the grill. So now I can extend that and say, well, here's a handful of crackers, which are really dry, but here's a nice moist potato that I steamed, both starches. And so when we look at these foods that are already holding a good bit of fluid, they are definitely going to be a better choice than the stuff that's already dried out. So people that snack on really dry things all the time, they're going to make that dry mouth worse. So what you want to look up is you want to look up yin foods and look at those as an emphasis. As far as reducing inflammation, number one on my list is curcumin. Curcumin is the extract from the spice turmeric, and the curcuminoids are one of the best anti-inflammatories, and right next to them are fish oils. And so when I use curcuminoids and when I use fish oils with individuals who have autoimmune conditions and inflammation, or inflammation even without autoimmune conditions, we can reduce that inflammation very significantly with those two things.
Let's go to Terry writes this. She says, is there a safe way to use colloidal silver topically or by ingesting it?
The only way that I would ever use colloidal silver is topically. You cut your foot at the beach and you might end up with a pussy wound. You know, clean that wound with the colloidal silver. I got no problem with that. I am 100% against using colloidal silver internally. The amount of information that's put out about colloidal silver is overstated. You know, it's one of the things like the alkaline water story and the apple cider vinegar stories and the kombucha stories that just do not have any solid evidence of benefit. As much urban myth as there is out there. And so I do not recommend colloidal silver for the treatment of gastric distress. I do not recommend it for infection. I do not recommend it for sinusitis. The only thing that I recommend it for is topical use.
Now, Dennis writes in, he said, at the end of your presentation to the audience of more than 200 physicians, you received a standing ovation and you didn't tell your audience that, writes Dennis.
Well, that's very dear, husband. Thank you. I guess I just hired my husband as my PR agent.
This is Dennis Plews, her husband. Dennis, thanks for that. Somebody wrote in and said, Zypan, does that increase stomach digestion, acidity?
I'm sorry, I didn't...
Zypan.
I don't know the product.
Okay, all right. David writes this. He says, I live near McNatt's Cleaners, their main location in Seminole Heights, and I sometimes go there to get clothes dry cleaned. I noticed it always smells weird there, and I worry about the people who work inside and their chemical exposure. Do dry clean employees have a shorter lifespan because of the exposure?
I don't really know. What I found over the years of practice that I've been in is that many people that work in print shops, you know, in places like dry cleaning, places where car repairs are done, where they're using a lot of gunk and a lot of solvents and are exposed to asbestos, you know, from the brake pads, et cetera, that I see a lot of people that have worked in those industries having significant health problems earlier, younger than I would see otherwise. But a lot of people that end up in industries where they're exposed to these solvents and other toxic products in the air, they just don't stay at the job because they end up with chronic headaches or skin conditions, the two things that show up first. But whether they actually have a shorter lifespan, I don't know those stats.
Well, our phone number is 813-239-9663. And this is the Health and Nutrition Program on 88.5 FM. And if you've got a question for Eve Prang Plews, you can call us at that number. This person writes, it's Jerry in Bradenton, says, what's your opinion about getting the shingles vaccine? And have you any information on the new one called Shingrix?
Well, the information that's been put out by the government regarding Shingrix is really excellent in terms of the fact that it better prevents an episode of shingles. We want to remember that shingles is from the chickenpox virus. And once we've had chickenpox as kids, those viruses stay in our body forever. And they live in our nerve cells. And something aggravates those nerve cells, then it can pop out again as shingles. It's in the herpes family, herpes zoster. And the nature of the current Shingrix, which has just been released nationwide, just been approved in the state of Florida to be given, seems to have a better success rate in preventing shingles, and if people get shingles, having a milder episode. There's not enough people that have been inoculated on a, you know, countrywide basis for us to get bad news about it. And so for individuals over 60, it's recommended. People that have had shingles knows that it's nasty. And so, you know, these are one of the places where it looks like the vaccine benefits outweigh the downside of that.
Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Yeah, let's go to Elizabeth in Riverview. Hi, Elizabeth. You're on with Eve Prang Plews. What's your question about nutrition?
I just have a comment to make. The dear lady has spoken about giving up one particular business. She says, now, I don't bring them a lot of business, but I just don't like this, so I'm not going back. That, to me, makes a lot of common sense. And my suggestion for us all, don't we all have someplace in a closet somewhere shopping bags, those lovely canvas things? Some of them are quite pretty. They're given as gifts, even. Do we take them to the grocery store?
Yes.
No. We load up on those plastic bags and bring our groceries home. Why don't we use the shopping bags for what they are supposed to be used for? Shopping.
Good woman.
I'm going to do it.
And this is the way you remember it. When you come back from the market, my husband went to the market yesterday afternoon, and he came back and he had two of those reusable bags of groceries that he had purchased.
Yep.
And as soon as those are emptied out, then we put them right at the front door. Because what happens so often when you go shopping, you go, oh, drat, I left the bag at home.
Well, even put them in the car.
Keep them in the car, and that'll do it. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that reminder to all of our listeners.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. Thanks, Elizabeth. Frank Knox is our phone producer today. Again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. This email comes in from Louise. She says, I think women should lead the charge on eliminating use of straws because straws were probably invented for women. If not for mussing their lipstick, what other purpose do they have? And women need to tell other women. Most waitresses are female. I told my waitress about the plastic killing the animals, and she said, you brought tears to my eyes, and then she took the straw away.
Well, I mean, our first step is for us to raise our own consciousness about eliminating the stir sticks and eliminating eliminating the straws. And it's hard. I've gone into the restaurant and I fully intend to say this is a no straw table and I just forget. I'm engaged in conversation. And so the thing that I've done is I've gone to the restaurant manager or the restaurant owner and say, could you train your staff to only give straws on request? Because there are certain conditions where the straws are important. And the nature of their use in places like nursing homes is often obvious. But, you know, I sometimes try to embarrass my audiences by saying, are you too weak to lift your chin to drink out of a glass? You know, we don't really have any need for all of those straws. But, you know, a year ago February, when I got tied in with the United Nations Clean Seas program, and you can go up on hashtag Clean Seas or cleanseas.org to learn about making the personal commitment of picking up three pieces of plastic every day. But what turned me around was not only that quote that by 2050 the fish will weigh less than all of the plastic in the ocean. It was seeing the video of the 4-inch straw that was stuck up the nostril of the turtle. And it was a heartbreaker. And you can go on YouTube and see that video. It's not a pretty video. There's a lot of blood in it. But happily, the turtle survived. And so because that straw was sticking out, the turtle couldn't bite anything. It couldn't eat. So when you see that and it awakens your heart to say, I don't want to injure these animals. You know, we have over 1,500 animals that are threatened by plastic litter. And of those 1,500 animals, 600 of them are already endangered. So, you know, we're talking about a huge effect on the ecosystem. The ecosystem is not just affected by warming waters. It's not just affected by the acidification of the ocean. It's being affected because every single ounce of plastic that we've manufactured since the 1950s is still here. It does not break down. It only gets smaller.
That is just awful. Just want to remind you as a listener, thanks to all those people that made a contribution to WMNF during our fund drive that ended last week. We came up a little bit short, so if you can, we hope you'll help us keep programs like Eve Praying Plu's health and nutrition program on the air by making a donation today. Help us close that gap. Please make your contribution at WMNF.org. Yeah, let's go to Patty, who's in Newport Richey. Hi, Patty. You're on with Eve. What's your question?
Eve, as far as the plastic bags, I'd love to be able to get rid of all my plastic bags and stuff, but what do you use then, like in your garbage can outside or that garbage can in the kitchen or the waste baskets? What do you use?
Well, the situation is we are not going to eliminate all the plastic.
Okay.
What we're trying to do is to reduce it and not have it loose. You know, even if you do good with plastic recycling, and bags don't go into recycling, they have to be put in a special container like they have in front of many of the big box stores because they're number fives on the recycle list and those don't get recycled. So just like yogurt cups, I mean, I thought for years that yogurt cups got recycled, but, you know, at places like Whole Foods, they have a place where you can bring things that triangle, that recycle triangle on the bottom of the container has a number five in it. Five, six, and sevens don't actually get recycled. So we're not going to eliminate all of it, but we don't want it loose. What happens is you drive, you know, I just drove up here up 75 and I saw bags flying along the sides of the highway. So if it's not a situation where you're taking all those bags and collecting them, and when you got a bag full of bags, you know, you drop them off at Lowe's or any of those big box stores. But it's also realizing that we're addicted to this plastic. But how much of it are you using is really the question. Can you stop purchasing things in plastic that you could buy otherwise? You can get, you know, half and half in a plastic carton, or you can get it in a paper carton. You know, you can buy eggs in a plastic carton, or you can buy them in a cardboard carton. So every single time that you make the conscious decision to reduce it, you're still having an effect. The two things that I learned this year were don't throw anything in your recycle bin that's smaller than a golf ball or a ping pong ball. Because if it's that small, it's not going to get processed correctly by the machine. It's the 1s, 2s, and 3s that go into the recycle bin that actually get recycled, because less than 10% of all of the plastic that we send out gets recycled. China will not buy our trash anymore. And so we're going to have a crisis in this country in terms of the 100 million plastic bottles that get thrown out every day, the 500 million straws that get used every day. And so make your effort where you can measure a difference. And if I come up with a better idea, I guarantee I'll let you know, Patty.
Thank you.
All right, Patty, thanks a lot. What do you think about bio bags, bags made from cornstarch?
Well, you know, I use them in my clinic. Yeah. But what I found out at one of the conferences that I went to is if it's at the bottom of the landfill, which is it doesn't get any oxygen in it, it's a hypoxic environment, then they don't break down. So they certainly do break down. I took some of my loose Christmas ornaments and I put them in one of these cornstarch-based bags and stuck them up in the attic. You know, and a year later when I got the Christmas ornaments down, the bag had disintegrated and didn't hold them anymore. But that's not true if it's at the bottom of a landfill. So, you know, the plastics industry is spooky right now, because they know that people are making these kinds of changes. So I guarantee you there's work being done to try to develop something that is truly biodegradable, but it's not here today. So today, don't throw your yogurt cups in the recycle. Don't put little tiny caps in the recycle. They're not going to be able to be recycled. And if the recycling load has got more than 0.5% of some sort of other waste in it, they won't recycle it at all.
Mm. Let's go to Matt in Ozona. Hi, Matt. You're on the air with Eve. What's your question?
Hello,
Matt.
How you doing?
Good, Matt. You're on.
Good. Hey, this is more of a digestive question for you guys. Shift gears. So, with leaky gut or permeable gut syndrome, what's the best way you think to heal your gut, and how do you measure it as an ongoing basis of progress? Is it, you know, looking at the biome in your stool, or what's the best process of both healing and measuring?
First off, you can measure zonulin. Zonulin is, I know it sounds like a Star Trek name, like the Zonulins just landed, but zonulin is the compound that causes the tight junctions in the bowel to open up, what we refer to as leaky gut. Leaky gut doesn't, there's no holes in your bowel. There are these very tight junctions. If you squeeze your fingers together, you'll see that that's tight junctions where your fingers touch each other. But if you relax your hand and you allow your fingers to separate, then that is what becomes leaky gut. The way that you test for leaky gut is to use a lactulose challenge. Remember, if it ends in an OSE, it's a sugar. So lactulose is given as a challenge, and then your urine is collected. And if the big molecules get through, then we know we have leaky gut. If the small molecules don't get through, then we know we've got swelling and inflammation in there. So we can make a diagnosis from that. The thing that I've seen that makes the greatest difference is stopping whatever is insulting the gut. So doing a stool study to find out what critters are living in the bowel, good guys, bad guys, as far as bacteria, any yeasts, any parasites, because those can create leaky gut. NSAIDs, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories like aspirin and these other non-steroidal anti-inflammatories that are out there like ibuprofen, they can create leaky gut. Excess alcohol can create leaky gut. Just a plain old crappy diet can create leaky gut. But the thing that I've seen that makes the biggest difference in getting that surface of that bowel to heal is the amino acid glutamine. All amino acids are sold with an L and a hyphen in front of them, so it's L-glutamine. Glutamine is one of the things the bowel runs on. And the other thing is butyrate, B-U-T-Y-R-A-T-E, butyrate. Butyrate is a short-chain fatty acid. And so the use of butyrate and the use of glutamine, and glutamine I will start with a teaspoon a day as a powder. I don't buy it in capsules because it's way too expensive that way. It has virtually no taste. It's easy to mix in water. Start with a teaspoon and then go to a teaspoon every meal and then go to a rounded teaspoon every meal after 5 or 10 days and then go to a heaping teaspoon every meal. I've used as much as 3 tablespoons, which is 36 grams a day of glutamine, and that helps to heal the leaky bowel. But if you don't get rid of the termites, and what I mean by that is whatever the bad critters are that are living in the bowel, or the food reactions that are happening in the body, then you're just going to chase your tail because you're trying to heal it at the same time you're still damaging it. So is that helping, Matt?
Yeah, it does help. The zonulin you mentioned, that's a new discovery. I think it's a protein that they found in gluten. Is that correct?
Well, gluten is one of the things that can raise zonulin and cause the tight junctions to open up. This is the work of Fasano, the famous gluten doctor. But the circumstances are that we can learn a lot when we do a stool study that measures these other inflammatory compounds. Because if we don't eliminate the situation that there is a microbiology problem in here, again, we're going to keep chasing our tail.
So where else would you get zonulin from besides gluten?
You don't. Gluten seems to be the main trigger for the production of zonulin.
Okay.
And the amount doesn't matter. See, you have non-celiac gluten sensitivity. So they don't have celiac disease. They don't have the autoimmune disease. But there are individuals that even one crouton is enough to set that off. And leaky gut can also be set off by trauma. Somebody can have trauma. I mean, there's a mouse study, you know, where the mouse got thumped on the head, and 15 minutes later, the gut was leaky. So,
but for me, the gluten does not bother me, but it does. I do have leaky gut, so I can eat a cracker. It doesn't bother me. But my wife with celiac does, usually. So,
but you're saying it doesn't bother you. Doesn't mean that there isn't a biological action going on.
Understood, yeah.
So, you know, for somebody that gets cramps and bloating and diarrhea, you know, this is a no-brainer. But there are individuals that can eat small amounts of gluten in wheat, rye, barley, spelt, kamut, in any of those grains, and they are changing the ecology of the lining of the bowel.
How much does the biome in the gut itself affect leaky gut syndrome?
The biome, the DNA of all the critters?
I'm just saying, you know, my bacteria that's in my gut, the good and bad bacteria in my gut.
Okay, so we're talking about two different things. We're talking about microbiota. Microbiota is the collection of all the critters that are living in there. And so, again, there are things like Pseudomonas aeruginosa and other bacteria that are erosive or corrosive in people's minds to the lining of the gut. And we have to eliminate those bacteria in there. The same thing is true with yeast. When we get an overgrowth of yeast in the bowel, and candida is the most common one, but there are 70 species of candida. You know how a mushroom at the base of it has little teeny tiny hairs that anchor it to the rotted wood? They're called the mycelium. When the yeast colonize inside the bowel, those mycelium will actually go into the bowel wall. They'll anchor themselves into the bowel wall. So they're literally making these microscopic holes in the bowel wall. So if I don't get rid of the yeast, and whether the yeast was created because somebody took a lot of antibiotics, whether the yeast was created because somebody's got a rotten diet, the idea is if I don't get rid of that yeast, I can't seal up those holes. Does that make sense?
And what's the best way to get rid of that candida, that yeast?
Well, it's going to vary according to the species it is. You know, it could be Geotrichum, it could be Rhodoterula, it could be Candida tropicalis, Candida parapsilosis. You know, they're not all the same. So there are specific, obviously, because I am not a doctor, I don't work with pharmaceuticals, I work with botanicals. And so whether those botanicals are berberine, or whether I'm using grapefruit seed extract, or whether I'm using tannin concentrates, depends on what species shows up on the test. We want to do this specifically. We can create the same kind of resistance to critters in the bowel with wrongly using certain things. Just like you can do with antibiotics, you can make bacteria stronger. Well, you can make yeast or bacteria stronger by using the wrong botanical. Because you kill the weakest ones, you leave the strongest ones behind, and then you have to treat again. That's the reason we want specificity.
Matt, thanks a lot. Thanks for your question.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks. Marissa writes, so what's the best way to get mold out of your body? I know it's important to get the moldy out of the environment, but what can I do to get mold out of my system?
Well, I don't know that you have mold in your system. I mean, you might have had water damage in your house and have mold growing on your drywall or something like that, and you're trying to get rid of that. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's colonized in your body. Chronic sinusitis that is very repetitive and is not often relieved with the use of antibiotics is often wrongly diagnosed. It's fungal sinusitis. It's not bacterial sinusitis. So I run mold tests on individuals. I run 15 different mycotoxin tests to find out if the mold is actually in their body. But, you know, there's lots of people that have had water damage to their house, and that doesn't mean the mold is colonized in their body.
Let's go to Craig in St. Petersburg. Craig, you're on with Eve. What's your question about health and nutrition?
I have a comment on just to add to Patty, the callers, with the plastic, I make best use out of all my reusable bags. I actually take glass containers with me to restaurants to bring my leftovers home.
Good man.
Oh, yeah, I do, and I get very positive comments about it. Even when if I go to Target or Walmart, I buy towels and sheets. I just tell them, look, as long as I hold the receipt on the way out the door, I don't need a bag. As long as I can carry it, I don't use a bag for any of that. My problem is things like clamshells. If I want a single piece of cake or some brownies and I go to Local Market or Publix or Winn-Dixie, they're not offering me an alternative, Eve. So even if I say, well, I'm going to bring my own glass container, they say, well, okay, we'll rip the price tag off the bottom and take it up to the... Well, then they can't reuse that. Now they're tossing it basically in front of me. So I don't think stores are offering people like myself, like you, like Patty, any great alternatives.
Not yet.
For us to try. I mean, you know, some of us are actually trying. And they're not offering us enough alternatives.
But you're the pioneer. And the pioneer that is at the front of the wedge that's, you know, driving through our limited education about the dangers of plastic, you are exactly the person that is going to help this entire movement change the corporations. You know, we've got regulations in Fort Myers now. If they catch you with a plastic straw on the beach, it's a $100 fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in Malibu, California, no plastic ware, no plastic takeout is available anymore. You know, Dunkin' Donuts is eliminating its styrofoam cups. I mean, you've got action that is being taken, even corporately, but it's going to take people like you who are willing to go up and say, I want the paper box, I don't want the plastic clamshell. And keep saying it over and over and over again. And that's how we're going to make a better choice.
I even bring my stainless steel plastic or my stainless steel cup into Dunkin' Donuts and say, just put the coffee in here. I can always wash it later.
Good man.
All right, Craig.
Thank you for
your
efforts.
Good advice. Thank you. And Robert writes this. Can you please talk about Bushing's disease? Thanks. I love your show.
I'm glad you love my show, but I don't know what Bushing's disease is. But I will 2 weeks from now when I come back.
Okay. Bushings, B-U-S-H-I-N-G-S. Okay. Diane writes, what was the recommendation to use instead of calcium for osteoporosis?
MCHC, microcrystalline hydroxyapatite concentrate, MCHC. I like the stuff that comes out of New Zealand because we're using lamb bone fundamentally. New Zealand is a big lambing country, so they have lots of lamb bones left over, and these are processed at incredibly low temperatures, and as a result, they have all the nutrients that the bone needs, not calcium alone. So I would not buy MCHC from a Chicago meatpacking house where those animals had been exposed to pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, hormones, and radioactive debris. I would choose it from New Zealand.
All right. You're listening to a live program here on WMNF. It's our health and nutrition program, which is on every other Monday at 10 o'clock. And let's go to Deborah in St. Petersburg. Deborah, you're on the air with Eve.
Hi, Eve. Thanks for being on again. Third time in a row.
You have a question?
Yes, actually, I had a question, just a brief one. You know, people can buy, like, gifts for people, reusable cups or stainless steel straws or bags as presents. And I don't know. I've just found that really useful. And like Craig said, people seem to be appreciative. And, you know, buy them glass containers.
Great idea.
So, yeah, buy trash bags from recycled materials. Just, you know, kind of help people out.
That's very thoughtful of you.
Well, I think this is a very thoughtful discussion, so I appreciate the fact that you keep bringing it up.
And one of the gifts... Go ahead.
It always reminds me to pick up more plastic in the yard.
And everywhere, every parking lot you go into, you'll never be at a loss for finding a piece of plastic to pick up. And every time I pick up that piece of plastic off the ground, I think I'm saving a fish.
Oh, that's good. That's good. So you encourage me, and I'm sure you encourage others.
And I'll let you encourage others now.
I do.
Please do.
I always do. Planet first.
Thanks for your ideas.
All right, yeah, Deborah, thanks a lot. Thanks for doing what
Goodbye.
You do. Let's go to Shane in Tampa. Hi, Shane. You're on the air with Eve. What's your question?
How you guys doing?
Good.
All right. So I'm fully on board with the plastic. I grew up around the ocean. Always leave the beach cleaner than I.
Yeah, baby.
I got there. But my question was more towards, I'm 32 years old, 6 foot, Caucasian male. I want to quit smoking cigarettes. And I get down to, one a day or two a day. And then, I'm there for, 2 weeks, and then it picks back up again. Would you have any hints, hints or... Is there anything I could be eating that would fill the void of the urge?
Let me tell you what I use. First off, tobacco is in the same nightshade family as tomatoes, potatoes, okay. Eggplant, and peppers. Tomatoes, potatoes, eggplant, and pepper, along with tobacco, are all members of the nightshade family. And so when somebody's in that first couple of week period where they're wanting to get off of cigarettes completely, I advise that they don't eat those four categories of food. Because
they do not
eat those foods. Do not eat tomatoes, potatoes, eggplants, or peppers when you're trying to quit smoking. Because there are some amino acid sequences that are in those foods that are the same as the amino acid sequences that are in tobacco. And so they may keep those receptor sites, quote, alive or working. Remember that nicotine is a stimulant. Nicotine actually gets to your brain in 7 seconds. It gets there faster even than cocaine does. So for very many people, I have used the amino acid tyrosine. Again, amino acids are sold with an L and a hyphen before their name, L-tyrosine. An L-tyrosine, first thing in the morning when they get out of bed, usually 500 milligrams, about a half an hour or an hour before dinner. You want to put it in when it's not going to compete with food. If you put it in with the meal, it'll just get digested as part of the meal.
Right.
But somebody can use a tyrosine upon arising and use a tyrosine at noontime or, half hour or an hour before their lunch. And that helps to support some of those high activity neurotransmitters.
Oh, wow.
And as a result of that, that also reduces the desire. But you have to remember there are two habits. One habit is being a junkie to the nicotine, and the other is the habit itself. Start the car, light a cigarette. Answer the phone, light a cigarette. Have a meal, light a cigarette. And so I haven't had a cigarette since I was 25 years old, but what I did is I bought emery boards. And I bought emery boards and I put them in every cup and dish and pencil cup in the house. And every time I felt like I wanted to pick something up, to have a cigarette, because it's, major religious process, because you have to have the ashtray and you have to have the matches and blah, blah, blah. And so what I did is I just take that emery board and start working on my nails. And so it was one of the things that gave me something to do with my hands until such time as I broke the habit. So good luck, Shane. It's a noble goal. Remember, there is no single bigger killer in the world than cigarettes.
Awesome. Thank you very much. And you guys are on every other Monday from 10 to 11?
That's right. And also, we are on the archives. Because this is a public affairs show, we are on WMNF archives. So you can go to those archives. And also, because this show is picked up by national NPR, you can go to the NPR blogs and you can find this show rebroadcast on NPR.
Oh, wow. No way. That's awesome. I really appreciate all your insight. It's the first time I'm catching the show, but very informative in all realms of everything.
Okay. Let us know about your success, Shane.
Will do. Will do.
All right, Shane. Bye now. Shane, thanks a lot. We also podcast this show, too. You can subscribe to the podcast of the show at our website, WMNF.org. John writes, what's the solution to decreasing acid in the stomach, or how do I increase acid in the stomach? Is there something I can take?
Well, you don't decrease acid in the stomach. The acid in the stomach is provoked to manufacture based on what you put in your mouth. So like I said, if you have this basal amount of acid that's there all the time, but if you ate something like an apple that doesn't have much in the way of protein in it, then the stomach won't produce more acid. The way that you increase acid is after the meal. You always want to let the stomach make all the acid it's going to make first, and then you use betaine hydrochloride. You couldn't put hydrochloric acid in your mouth. Obviously, you'd burn your tongue off swallowing it. But betaine hydrochloride is one step before the hydrochloric acid, so it converts into hydrochloric acid in the stomach, but you would only use it after a meal, because you want the stomach to make all that it's going to. One of the old folklore remedies is to take gentiana, green gentian. Gentian is a plant, grows here in the Tampa Bay area. But green gentian is what we know as bitters. So if you've been to a cocktail lounge and you've seen a cocktail that's made with bitters, take a glass, put three shakes of bitters in it, put about an ounce of water in there, slug it back about 20 minutes before you're ready to eat, and that will help the body trigger the proper production of acid.
Very helpful. All right, let's go back to the phones. We're going to go to Shannon in St. Petersburg. Hi, Shannon. You're on the air with Eve. What's your question?
Hi, Eve. I have a question about my son. He's 7 years old, and he struggles with constipation. He's struggled for many years with it, and I'm just looking for some new ideas. I've tried magnesium for him. He almost gags when I put it in his apple juice, and it's very hard to get him to drink it. We've tried a few different supplements. Is there anything, we are not gluten-free or dairy-free, and would that be your first suggestion?
Now, when he does poop, does he poop a really large stool, large in diameter?
It's huge.
Right.
It's
so scary. As soon as I hear that with a kid, I have to do a stool study, because that can be an overgrowth of an anaerobic bacteria creating that. You know, that's the first place I'd go, is to find out the reason why. But what I use with young children is, if you take 12 prunes and 12 figs dried, put them in the freezer for a while, because then you can take a scissor and cut them easily.
Okay.
Put them in a saucepan. Cover them with water, bring it up to a boil, turn it down to a simmer, and let it simmer covered for about 15, 20 minutes. And you got this mush.
Okay.
Take a glass jar, put boiling water in it so you know it's hygienic, and then transfer that fig prune combination to the glass jar.
Okay.
It's sweet. It's delicious. When he gets up in the morning, before he has anything else to eat, you're going to give him 1 to 2 tablespoons. We're going to start out with 1 tablespoon. But kids like this because it's candy-like. It's sweet. It's delicious. And so we give him that fig prune combination every day. There's a bunch of dynamics we don't have time to go over on the phone about how it works. But let's see if that doesn't give your boy some relief.
Would we come into your office to get a stool study? Do you accept children and do that kind of thing?
Well, I do treat children, but the nature of it would depend on, you know, perhaps you have a pediatrician that would be amenable to doing a full microbiology on your boy. But but again, the key is this really large diameter material.
Oh, okay.
So let's solve this problem.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it.
All right, Shannon, thanks a lot. And then Pat writes, how about plastic forks and spoons? When I get takeout, I say no bag and no cutlery for me, and then I often have to explain what cutlery is. Isn't using a straw more hygienic than putting your mouth on a glass, which may be questionably washed? Should I carry a reusable straw, writes Pat.
Well, first off, plastic forks and spoons, et cetera, can't be recycled because they're too small. They gum up the machinery. And I'm glad you're doing that. And that's what we do as well, is to just say, I don't use the word cutlery. I say I don't need any utensils. Using a straw more hygienic than putting your mouth on a glass, which may be questionably washed. You're fairly protected from any bacteria that would be on a surface. You know, there's as much bacteria floating in the air around you as they're going to be on a surface of a glass. So I don't see that as more hygienic. There is a new reusable straw that is going to be coming out in approximately November. And you know the key fobs that we have for the keyless entry on the car? It's a box that's about that size that can go on your key ring. And it's got a compressible straw in it that when you take it out, it just pops up to its full size. And it's got a cleaning tool in it. And this is going to be the hit of the Christmas season. So stay tuned for the last straw.
And we just have 30 seconds left, but George from Tallahassee says, what are your thoughts on using grocery bags as trash bags?
Well, they're fine, except when you have liquid. You know, use the grocery bags, yeah. But if you've got liquid or wet stuff in there, you're going to pick that grocery bag out of the, you know, the kitchen waste can, and the bottom's going to drop out. So that's the only place that it doesn't work well.
So he's talking about paper grocery bags.
I would presume
so. Yeah. Dennis wants to remind us that glutamine also speeds muscle growth. That's your husband writing in. Should we say yes or no?
He's supposed to be at the gym right now.
He sent like three emails to us. Hey, Eve, we're out of time. Thanks a lot. Great to see you.
Thank you.
And will we see you in 2 weeks
live
and in person?
Okay. I'll be here live and in person.
So Eve Prang-Plues has been with us for the last hour. She hosts the show every other Monday. She is a licensed clinical nutritionist, and she drives up from Sarasota. So.
And I want to give a shout out. Sarasota Sierra Club will be meeting on Thursday night and doing a program on microplastics.
All right, that's really important. Well, this is WMNF in Tampa. Stay tuned for the latest news, and thanks to Frank Knox.
Live from NPR News in Washington.